Okay, last time I had fairly extensively gone over the places where in the New Testament the Greek form 4026, parahistemi, appeared. It only appears times in the New Testament, but each of them is very important. To recap, there's two basic usages for all the histemi verbs. One is a transitive usage, which indicates an action or occurrence or a state directed at one or more grammatical objects. And the other is an intransitive. It's sort of a description, sort of a state description of something. And the state description was more like those standing by, those stood around, standing about, this sort of thing. And in the two places where it's used in the New Testament in a transitive sense, 2 Timothy 2:16 uses the English uses the word shun, and Titus 3:9 uses the word avoid. Both of these can be sort of thought of it in the way of standing away from, because the peri means around, like a perimeter, around an edge, and the histemi is stand, so it's kind of stand away from something. But what I like to do in cases where we have a more limited appearance of a Greek form is in the New Testament is to go to the Septuagint. And I stumbled across some very, very interesting things. And this is going to take me a while to get through, but I want to get started. The non-apocryphal uses of this Greek form in the Septuagint, there is a total of three of them. Turns out two of them are the intransitive usage, used basically for those standing around, and one transitive usage. I want to start with the intransitive usage because there's two occurrences of that, but they're in a sense simple, but they're not simple in the sense that I get the feeling that this Greek form is used in situations with great gravity and with great messages to us if we know how to look. The other thing that I find in looking at the passages where this Greek form appears in the Septuagint is that there's differences in a lot of cases between what the Septuagint has to say and the King James Version based on Hebrew text. Not that there's anything bad, but it's just it's in some cases a little different view. And Tony indicated he can post some of the the Brenton translation, which is the translation I use, although I tend to use the Greek more than the translation, but the translation is a useful guideline because, English is a native language. The first occurrence of this form that I want to talk about appears in the Septuagint, but not in the English Bible, in the King James, in, let's see, 1 Samuel chapter 4. And to get the context, I need to start at the beginning of the book. So we can turn to 1 Samuel chapter 4. And I'm going to go through to verse 18. just to give the context. So if you could post the first couple, 1 Samuel chapter 4. This is in the English, the King James, to start with. The difference comes down a little later, but I just want to have the context. Unless everybody is super familiar with what's happening in 1 Samuel, I know at my house, Penny and Heidi are because they're studying this. So, but the 1 Samuel chapter 4. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer. And the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines. And they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us this day before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hands of our enemies." Turns out to be a very bad plan on their part. So the people went to Shiloh, that they might bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. Now, if you know the earlier part of 1 Samuel, you will know that Hophni and Phinehas are not nice people. They're not very good representatives of our Lord. And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What meaneth the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?" And they understood that the Ark of the Lord was come into the camp. And the Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God is come into the camp." And they said, "Woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing heretofore. Woe unto us! Who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews, as they have been to you. Quit yourselves like men and fight." And the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent. And there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the ark of God was taken. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. Now here's where it gets into the part. So, not a good situation. They were badly beaten in battle, and the ark of the covenant was taken by the Philistines. Very, very deep, a deep moment of deep, deep gravity. Verse 12, "And there ran a man of Benjamin out of the army and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent, with earth upon his head. And when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it all the city cried out. And when Eli heard the noise of the crying, he said, 'What meaneth the noise of this tumult?' And the man came in hastily and told Eli." Now, if one goes to the Septuagint and looking at the Brenton translation, we'll pick it up. Okay, now we'll still say, yeah, and Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim, that he could not see. Verse 16 reads, "And the man came unto Eli, 'I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army.' And he said, 'What is there done, my son?'" Verse 17, "And the messenger answered and said, 'Israel's fled before the Philistines, and there hath been also a great slaughter among the people, and thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken.' And it came to pass, when he made mention of the ark of God, that he fell," that's Eli, "off the seat backward by the gate, and his neck brake, and he died. For he was an old man and heavy, and he judged Israel 40 years. Now, if you look at the Brenton translation in the Septuagint, and in the Septuagint, 1 Samuel is called 1 Kings, and if it's picked up, if you can, I don't know if you can find that, Tony, in the Septuagint, it'd be 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 16 and 17 would be good if you could find that. But I'll start reading the English translation, the Brenton translation. And Eli said to them that stood round about him. This does not appear in the King James. Okay, there you go. What is the voice of this sound? And the man hasted in advance to Eli and said to him, I am he that has come out of the camp, and I have fled from the battle today. And Eli said, what is the event, my son? And the young man answered and said, the men of Israel fled from the face of the Philistines, and there was a great slaughter among the people, and both thy sons are dead, and the ark of God is taken. The main difference is in the English in verse 16, if you could post 1 Samuel 4:16 from the King James to follow that, Tony, then that would show the difference. And the man said to Eli, I'm coming, he that came out of the army. And you notice that the whole thing, and Eli said to them that stood round about him. That's our Greek form 4026, the parahistemi form. In this case, it's an intransitive form. So that's one that's, you know, sometimes you find these in the Bollinger notes where it'll make mention of a divine supplement. This is here a divine supplement. We found what Eli was saying to those around him. The main points are basically the same, but it's interesting that this form shows, this Greek form, parahistemi, shows up at a very important juncture. The ark had just been taken. That's a very, very major event. The next place where it shows up in the Septuagint, in the intransitive form, is those standing about, is in 2 Samuel chapter 13. I'm not going to go through all of this. The scenario here, what's happening in chapter 13, is this is what happens. This is when Amnon, the son of David, forces himself on his sister Tamar, and basically later on, Absalom has Amnon killed. And I want to pick up at 2 Samuel. Chapter 13, verse 23 in the King James. Just as a way bringing up to speed for context. So 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 23. And it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is beside him. And Absalom invited the king's sons, and Absalom came to the king and said, behold now, thy servant hath sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. And the king said to Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all go, lest we be chargeable unto thee. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. Then Absalom said, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said unto him, why should he go with thee? But Absalom pressed him, and he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite, then kill him, fear not. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man gat him upon his mule and fled. Now, verse 30 is where it picks up, and the King James, okay, yeah, if you can, yes, very good, Tony, because this has in the Septuagint Brenton translation, verse 31, then the king arose and rent his garments, lay upon the ground, and all his servants that were standing round him, and that standing round him is our Greek form 4026, the parahistami form, rent their garments. In the King James, if you could post 2 Samuel 13:30, there's not always a one-to-one correspondence, or 31. 2 Samuel 13:31 in the King James does have this. It's a bit clearer it doesn't have the full form there. The king arose and tear his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by, has the same sort of sense, with their clothes rent. But again, a very, very critical juncture. Absalom, which basically is David's favorite son, has killed another of his son. So it's a pretty major event. Now, I want to turn to the only transitive usage for this Greek form, 4026, in the Septuagint. It appears in connection with Jericho. So, if you would go to Joshua, and we're going to pick it up in Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. And I want to break this is where Jericho comes into play. And there's a number of points. One thing that stands out to me for this Greek form, parahistami, is the PE, the peri prefix. If you think of that word in English, you think the English version, we have perimeter, which describes something essentially in a circle. And picture in your mind a circle, and if a circle has a center, then there's a perimeter to the circle. It's very well defined. And if you're on the perimeter of the circle, you're not at the center. You're essentially on the edge. You're around something, but you're not at the center. Keep that circle image in your mind as we get into this. But first of all, I want to set up what the Lord is commanding Joshua to do, and the information and what the Lord tells Joshua. So in the King James, the Joshua chapter 5, starting with verse 13, if you would post, Tony, verses 13 through 15, basically the end of the verse. Okay, Tony's actually posting the Septuagint, the Brenton Septuagint, which is fine. Yes. Oh no. Okay. That's Okay, now that it, so the King James reads, and it came to pass when Joshua, yeah, that's keep that right there. Now it came to pass when Joshua was in by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, Art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord I am now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth, and did worship, and said unto him, What saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, Loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place where thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. Now, in this set the Jericho, that he looked up with his eyes and saw a man standing before him. And there was a drawn sword in his hand, and Joshua drew near and said to him, Art thou for us or on the side of our enemies? And he said to him, I am now come the chief captain of the host of the Lord. And Joshua fell on his face on the earth and said to him, Lord, what commandest thou thy servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, Loose thy shoe off thy feet, for the place wherein thou now standest is holy. A few differences that I want to point out between these two. In the King James translation, the response of the captain of the host of the Lord is when Joshua asked them, Are you basically for us or against us? Is nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord, I am now come. In the Brenton translation, it says in verse 14, it says, And he said unto him, I am now come the chief captain of the host of the Lord. But I think this misses something, because if one looks at the Greek constructions in this, and what I'm focusing on is little tiny words, which are called coordinating conjunctions. And is the most common of them. But is another one. Now is another one. Those sorts of things. In this passage, if you look at the, between Joshua 5:13 through 15, if you look at the King James English, there's 10 ands, and then one nay and but. And the nay and the but in verse 14 stands out differently from all the other ands. The many ands would be called, as a figure of speech called polysyndeton, or many ands. Basically, coordinating conjunctions, their basic function in any language is to coordinate and coordinate more or less equal ideas. But is used as more of a difference. And in the Greek of the Septuagint, for verse 14, the conjunction used is delta epsilon, whereas all the others are chi, kappa, alpha, iota. So the English translation in the King James, which is from the Hebrew, in this case is more accurate than the Brenton English translation of the Septuagint, even though the Greek in the Septuagint has the different coordinating conjunction. What this has to do with is I want to try to, I can't help but get a little grammatical, but these are basically the things like and, they're technically known as copulative conjunctions. They basically couple things together without stating the relationship between the items. But the the where we would use but or the they, it is basically an adversative conjunction. It implies contrast, and the context will indicate how strong the contrast is. In this instance, I think the contrast is very clear, because Joshua, getting ready to do what he thinks is going to do battle, is asking whether this man that he sees is for them or against them. And obviously the captain of the host of the Lord is on their side. So I think it's important to keep that in view, that it is a contrast and it should be kept that way. So now, this is what happens right before the beginning of chapter 6. So if Tony, you could post Joshua chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. I want to break this down into several parts, because I think it makes it a bit clearer. The Lord isn't finished. The Lord isn't finished. And no, do it in the King James first. The Lord isn't finished giving all the information he wants to Joshua. Because now Joshua is right outside Jericho. So verses 1 through 5 read, "Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua," and the Bollinger indicates this is continuation, and I believe of the earlier passages looked at, "The Lord said unto Joshua, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend, every man straight before him." A few things I'd like to point out in this passage. One, notice again there's a lot of ands. Two, in verse 3, notice the word compass. So the word compass. When you think of a compass, nowadays people may not know what a compass is because everybody uses a GPS and nobody looks at a compass. But those of us Boy Scouts back in the day, and anyone who's really played with them, knows what a compass is. It's a round thing with a needle that spins around. Well, it's circular. It has a perimeter. It goes around and around in a circular, the needle travels in a circular fashion around the center of the circle. So, and in this set of verses, you have 9 ants. If you look at verse 3, "And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, go round about the city once. This thou do 6 days." I believe in here, if you look at the Greek in the Septuagint, and the Brenton translation doesn't really get this either, but if you look at this, it says, "Now Jericho was closely shut up and besieged, and none went out of it, and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, behold, I deliver Jericho into thy power, and its king in it, and its mighty. And do thou set the men of war round about it." Verse 3. I'll read that again. "And do thou set the men of war round about it." And it shall be that when ye shall sound with the trumpet, all the people shall shout together. And when they have shouted, the walls of the city shall fall of themselves, and all the people shall enter, each one rushing direct into the city. Notice in here, again, there's a now, and there's a bunch of ands. Verse 3, and do thou set the men of war round about it. The word there that's there set is the form that I'm looking at, the Greek form 4026, para histemi. Here put down as set. The men of war about it. But one thing I want to make is the coordinating conjunction used in the Greek is the versus the standard kahi. I believe in verse 3, this is to show that this actually should show a contrast, because I look at it this way. In verse 2, and the Lord said to Joshua, behold, I deliver Jericho into thy power, and its king in it, and its mighty men. I believe verse 3 would be more better rendered in any language, and it's not done either in the King James or in the Brenton translation. But do thou set the men of war round about it. It's a direct command from the Lord to Joshua. It's not, in a sense, Joshua doesn't have to do anything because the Lord already said that Jericho was delivered to them. But the Lord has specific things he wants done in a specific fashion. And the one thing that is common to all of this is that it's all done in a circle. They go around Jericho. And notice also some differences. There's some differences because it doesn't say in the Septuagint, it doesn't say anywhere to go around the city once and do that 6 days. It just gets to the end result. The other interesting thing that is in verse 3 in the Septuagint, which I think should, but do thou set the men of war round about it. Well, another first thing is, a minor point, is the thou in verse 3 is emphatic. So he's basically saying, you, Joshua, do set the men of war round about it. So it's a direct command to Joshua. It uses an emphatic form of pronoun. The other very interesting thing in this is the roundabout it part brings up another Greek form, which is in this case Greek form 29 Greek form 2945. You could post that, Tony. That would help. The Greek form 2945, which is kuklo. It's the dative singular of the noun kuklos. And it's only used in a dative singular form, and it's only used as an adverb, and it's true both in the Septuagint and in the New Testament. And it's an extremely interesting, it's an extremely interesting word. And I want to get more into that. This is sort of very good. A ring, cycle, akin, in a circle, by implication, everybody, all around, round about, compass, round, circle. there's a very deep motive here, motif, I guess what you would say, of a circle. I want to go on in Joshua, because what I find very interesting that in this passage of Joshua, there is a number of Greek forms, all of which include the prefix peri, or most of which include the prefix peri, like in the peri-histemi. Several of the forms have this kukloi as part of their form, and it's very concentrated usage, all in the context of what's happening at Jericho. So the next section that would be useful to look at is in the King James, Joshua chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. Because what this has to do with is what happened on day one. Joshua got his orders from the Lord. Now he's going to do something about it. So when Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said unto them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. And he said unto the people, pass on and compass, there's a compass again, compass the city, circular, round, and let him that is armed pass on before the Ark of the Lord. And it came to pass, when Joshua had spoken unto the people, that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns passed on before the Lord and blew with the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. And the armed men went on before the priests that blew with the trumpets, and the rear reward came after the Ark, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. And Joshua had commanded the people, saying, ye shall not shout nor make any noise with your voice, neither any word proceed out of your mouth until the day I bid you shout, then shall you shout. So the Ark of the Lord compassed the city going about it once, and they came to the camp and lodged in the camp. Okay, now in this passage in the King James English, we have basically compass appear twice. In verse 7, pass on and compass the city. And the verse 11, and the Ark of the Lord compassed the city. So now in the Septuagint, if you would post that same, yes, there we go. Is that the name? And Joshua the son of Nun went to the priests and spoke to them, saying, and let seven priests having seven sacred trumpets proceed thus before the Lord, and let them sound loudly, and let the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord follow. Charge the people to go round and encompass the city, and let your men of war pass on armed before the Lord, and let the men of war proceed before, and the priests bringing up the rear behind the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord proceed sounding the trumpets. And Joshua commanded the people, saying, cry ye not out, nor let anyone hear your voice, until he himself declare to you the time to cry out, and then ye shall cry out. And the Ark of the Covenant, having gone round, immediately returned to the camp and lodged there. So here we have gone round, go around. To go around, we had to encompass in verse 6, and in verse 11, the ark having gone round. Each of these words in English correspond to Greek forms. To go around is Greek form 4022, which is Peri-Erko-Mai, Greek form 4022. This particular Greek form appears three times in Joshua chapter 6 within the first 20 verses. So that I think is interesting. So it appears three times, Greek form 4022, Peri-Erko-Mai. And in verse 6 where it says in the Septuagint, and Joshua, the son of Nun, went to the priests and spoke to them, saying, charge the people to go around and encompass the city. The encompass appears just this once, and it's Greek form 2944, kukluo, which is the verb form of the kuklo. It's Greek form 2944. Greek form 2944. It appears only once in here, but again, it's the motif of circular. So in this passage there the kukluo, it's the verb form. See, it's from the same thing, to encircle. We have the circle motif. So now we went through day one. So day two of Jericho is verses 12 through 14. Verses 12 through 14. So if you can start with the King James of Joshua 6 verses 12 through 14 reads, and Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord, and the seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rearward came after the ark of the Lord, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpet. And the second day they compassed the city once and returned unto the camp. So they did 6 days. So if you notice in here again in verse 14, they compassed the city. Again, the compass, the circular motive. Thank you, Tony. That's the Brenton Septuagint translation. And on the second day, Joshua rose up in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets went on before the Lord, and afterward the men of war went on, and the remainder of the multitude went after the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and the priests sounded the trumpets. And all the rest of the multitude compassed the city 6 times from within a short distance, and went back again into the camp. This they did 6 days. So by this point, it shows that they're supposed to do this day 6 days, even if it didn't say so earlier in the Septuagint. And the word compassed here is very interesting because the Greek form for this is Greek form 4030, Greek form 4033, which is para-kuklo, which is the combination of the peri prefix and the kuklo circular part. So it's around and around, 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 around. Again, very, very deep circular motif on here. So you find that Greek form 4033. I can't do the pronunciation, I'm sorry. So this appears once in this passage, as you find here. It appears only once in the New Testament also. That's what I find extremely interesting. And it's at a very interesting place in all of these. So then I want to finish up this thing on day 7. Yes, Luke 19:33. Yes, I will get there. I have references for all of these, but I can't get all that now. But I want to finish up with what happens with Jericho. We all know, but let's see what happens. So day 7, the first part, with day seven. That's a little bit longer, encompasses basically the rest of the chapter. So if we look at verses, if we look just at verses 15 and 16 for right now, verses 15 and 16. So in and it came to pass on the seventh day, that they rose up early about the dying of the day and compassed the city. There's the compassed again, after the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they compassed the city 7 times. And it came to pass at the 7th time, when the priests blew with the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. The Brenton translation of the Septuagint reads, and on the 7th day they rose up early and compassed the city on that day 7 times. It came to pass at the 7th circuit, the priests blew the trumpets, and Joshua said to the children of Israel, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The last things I want to point out here is in verse 15, the word compassed here is the periarcho mei that we had third appearance in this chapter of Greek form 4022, periarcho mei. Very interesting thing is in verse 16, and it came to pass at the 7th circuit, the priests blew the trumpets. If you look at that word circuit, in the Greek, I don't have a Strong's number for this, mainly because it doesn't appear anywhere in the New Testament. It also appears no other than right here in the Septuagint. And I'm just going to say what the Greek word is and see if anybody can recognize this from anything. The Greek word, as close as I could come, would be periodo. Periodo. I think it's what we get our period from. Periodo. The peri is around. Odo is the odo is, I think, the Greek form for, I don't have a Greek, the thing, but it's for the way. It's a round way. So this is the only place where this Greek form, and it has the peri prefix, appears anywhere in the Greek scripture. I'll have a lot more to, no, it's not that. It's not periodeo. It doesn't appear anywhere there. It doesn't appear in the New Testament. P, epsilon, rho, iota, omicron, delta, omega. Yeah. It doesn't appear anywhere, but it's the only place that it appears. But I think it's interesting that it's where we get our word period from. Now, to wrap up quickly, what I think an important point is that the Lord had given Joshua the city, but the Lord wanted Joshua, all the people, to follow his explicit directions. Notice how they're around. They're always around the city. At no point until the walls fell were they to approach, and only after doing what the Lord said. So it's very, very important to know, understand, and to the best of anybody's ability, carry out the will of God. What I plan on doing next time is I'm going to go through, because I mentioned a number of Greek forms, with the exception of this last one, this periodo, I want to go through and bounce back to the cement and go through the appearance of all these forms, because I find it extremely, extremely revealing where they show up. I really think the Lord has reserved the usage of this circular motif for ideas of very deep import. So, I hope you all have a great conference. Sorry to ramble on like this. And I wish we could be there, but we can't. So, close with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this time to get together and share what we learn about your word. Please help it to get through in whatever way you intend it to. Please help the conference to go well. Please be with everybody. Please be with Ronnie and his family. We ask these things in Christ's name. Amen.